Okay, so we are ready to go. We'll pick a song. Right now we are in Raleigh, North Carolina, doing our university preaching. The university is just about ending for the year, so this is going to be one of the last times I'm here for this. And then in what happened to the light? Okay, that's good. And then in December, I will be in Fiji. And then as soon as Australia and New Zealand open, I will go there too. Doesn't look likely soon. Okay, let's get the guitar. Second, let me adjust the sound so it doesn't overload when I'm doing the kirtan. That's better, even though it's very low. Too low. Anyway, so it doesn't overload, or else you will not be able to hear it. Bottom group. Shimad, His Divine Grace, Avaya Charanada Bhaktivedanta Gosami, Srila Prabhupada Jai, ISKCON Founder Acharya, Srila Prabhupada Jai, Ananta Goti Vaishnava Friend Jai, Navacharya, Srila Huilas Thakur Jai, Param Se Gaho Sri Krishna Chaitanya, Prabhu Nityananda Shidwaita Gadadha Shivasiddhi Gaur Bhakta Vrindikajai Shishi Radhakrishna Gopikopanath Sayam Kunda Radhakunda Gidi Govardhan Kijai Vrindavadam Kijai Maturadam Kijai Jagannatha Swami Kijai Yamanamaya Kijai Shimadigla Siddhevi Kijai Samaveda Bhakta Vrindikajai Gaur Premananda Hari Hari Gaur. All glory is the assembled devotees. All glory is the assembled devotees. All glory is the assembled devotees. All glory is to Shri Guru and Gauranga Srila Prabhupada Kijai. Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Srimati Bhakti Vedanta Swamini Namani Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Pacharini Nivashesha Shunyavadi Paschachate Shatarini. So, Om Gadat, Timuranda Shaganjana, Shilakaya Chakshun and Miditam Gena Tasmai, Shigarve Namahai, offer my respectful obeisances unto the lotus feet of my spiritual master, His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, Srila Prabhupada, who so kindly opened my eyes with a torchlight of knowledge while I was blinded in the darkness of ignorance. So, Welcome to our Chaitanya Charitamrita class. So, I guess we'll continue with the Chaitanya Charitamrita. We're on the 19th chapter of the Chaitanya Charitamrita. Jaya Jaya, Sri Chaitanya Jaya Nityananda, Jaya Dvaita Chandra Jaya, Gaur Bhakta Vrinda. Jaya Jaya, Sri Chaitanya Jaya Nityananda, Jaya Dvaita Chandra Jaya, Gaur Bhakta Vrinda. Jaya Jaya, Sri Chaitanya Jaya Nityananda, Jaya Dvaita Chandra Jaya, Gaur Bhakta Vrinda. Okay. We're the 19th chapter of the Chaitanya Charitamrita, and we are on verse 145. Okay, let's see how we do this. Ready? Go. Let's see, what is this? Let me just see something. Oh, I understand. I understand. So, Dharmaje Manushya Jati Ati Alpatara Dharmaje Malachya Pulinda Bodas Shabatma. So, of course, the teachings to Srila Rupa Goswami, which are taking place in Prayag, Allahabad. Although the living entities known as human beings are very small in quantity, that division may be still further subdivided, for there are many uncultured human beings, like Malechas, Pulindas, Bodas, and Shabaras. Okay. So, Malechas, those who outside the Vedic culture and also eat meat, Pulindas, that means people, some of the European races, Bodhas, you know, those who say that everything is void, and Shabaras, those who keep pigs. Veda Nishta Maje, Ardeka Veda Mukhe Mane, Veda Nishada Papakare, Dharmanaki Gane. Among human beings, those who are followers of Vedic principles are considered civilized. Among these, almost half simply give lip service while committing all kinds of sinful activities against these principles. Such people do not care for regulated principles. So we find this a lot amongst people who say, well, I accept the Bhagavad Gita, I accept the Vedic literatures, but they do all sorts of sinful v-karmic things. Give you an example. Okay, here's an example right from Fiji, which I'm going to at the beginning of next month. Sometimes we go to different funerals in Fiji, and there's usually a pundit. And Prabhupada actually said pundits are bandits or bandits. He made a play on words. Anyway, so there's a pundit there, and the pundits have to register with the pundit society. You know, they have to be Brahmins, whatever it is, in Fiji. And so he registered pundit. And so the head of the registered pundits came to see what was happening at one funeral. And then he stepped outside, smoked some cigarettes, and went to eat some meat. So, you know, it's just they do rituals, but it has no sense, because even if someone's doing the ritual and they're not following the restrictions, as Prabhupada talks about this, not following the restrictions, it doesn't work. The rituals are not like some witchcraft or something like that, or tantric activities that you can simply do and they work, you know, some magic potion or magic mantra or something like that. In yoga, or in Krishna consciousness, which is yoga too, there's yam and niyam. So yam means restrictions. First thing is restrictions, like Prabhupada stressed. The four regulated principles, no meat, fish, or eggs, no intoxication, no illicit sex, and no gambling. Otherwise, I mean, you could chant Hare Krishna and you get some benefit, but you're not really making that much spiritual advancement. If you want to make spiritual advancement, first of all, you have to stop doing the bad things. And Prabhupada compared the bad things to putting water on wood while you're trying to light a fire. If you want the wood to be dry, then the wood has to be dry. You have to stop putting water on it. And dry wood is good for starting fires, but wet wood is terrible. I'll tell you a funny story about that. One time I was at, Govardhan, and it was time to do a fire sacrifice, so people brought me a lot of wood, and it was all wet. And it took several hours, and then finally some people had to break apart some furniture to actually start the fire. Otherwise, the fire wasn't going to start. So it's the same thing. Your Krishna conscious fire is not going to start. The fire of devotional service is not going to start until you start following the regulative principles. The word Veda means knowledge. Supreme knowledge consists of understanding the Supreme Personality of God in our relationship with Him and acting according to that relationship. So that's Sambandha and Abhideya. That means understanding the relationship, acting according to the relationship. Action in accordance with the Vedic principle is called religion. So, because what does the word religion mean? Religion. Re, again. Like return. Revert. Re-explain. It means again, do it. And legion, legion, is short for ligare, which means connect. So reconnect. So you can't reconnect without reconnecting. Like that sounds like a truism. Religion means following the orders of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, obviously. The Vedic principles, it doesn't mean saying that I believe and therefore I'm religious. No. Religious means acting in such a way that you're connected or reconnected. The Vedic principles are the injunctions given by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Aryans are divided, are civilized human beings who have been following the Vedic principles since time immemorial. No one can trace out the history of the Vedic principles set forth so that man might understand the Supreme Being. Literature or knowledge that seeks the Supreme Being can be accepted as a bona fide religious system, but there are many different types of religious systems according to the place, the disciples, and people's capacity to understand. In other words, the whole point of religion is to bring people to God. So there's different formulas, not that are atheist or anything like that, but there's different mechanisms to bring people to God. You know, there's prayer, the nine processes of devotional services, so you may stress one of those processes or several of those processes and then adapt those processes to a particular culture or a particular group of people. This requires some expertise and discrimination. The highest type of religious system is described in Srimad Bhagavatam 1:26, very important verse. Thus, Savai Pumsam Paro Dharma Yato Bhaktir Hoksaje. The highest form of religion is that by which one becomes fully conscious of the existence of God, including His form, name, qualities, pastimes, abode, and all pervasive features. When everything is completely known, that is the perfection of Vedic knowledge. The fulfillment of Vedic knowledge is systematic knowledge of the characteristics of God. This is confirmed by Lord Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita 15:15, Vedaischa Savayor Ahameva Vedya. The aim of Vedic knowledge is to understand God. Therefore, those who are actually following Vedic knowledge and searching after God cannot commit sinful activities against the Supreme Lord's order. However, in this age of Kali, welcome to the age of Kali, although men profess to belong to so many different kinds of religion, most of them commit sinful activities against the orders of the Vedic scriptures. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu therefore says herein, Veda nishyata papa kare, dharma nahi gane. In this age, men may profess a religion, but They actually do not follow the principles. Instead, they commit all kinds of sins. That's why when Prabhupada talked to people from a Christian background, one of the first things Prabhupada said was, Jesus Christ says, or the Bible says, thou shalt not kill. So if you're killing, you're violating one of the foundational principles that God gave. You know, God was up there in the Mount Sinai, and he carved the Ten Commandments, and one of them said, thou shalt not kill. And another one was, honor your spiritual master. I know that. So, Dhammachari Majje Bahuta Karma Nishta Goti Karma Nishta Majje Eka Gyani Shrestha. Among the followers of Vedic knowledge, most are following the process of fruitive activity in distinguishing between good and bad work. Out of many such sincere fruitive actors, there may be one who is actually wise. So, what Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is saying here, that there's those who follow Vedic knowledge, and they follow the principles, and they don't do sinful things, but they're mostly engaged in fruitive things. Fruitive things means they want some fruit. In other words, they're doing their rituals or whatever to get some benefit. And those are generally called karma kandya rituals. And they're just thinking, this is good, this is bad, which is not a bad idea to distinguish between good and bad. But their whole idea of distinguishing between good and bad is so that they can enjoy this world. That's the whole point. So out of many of these sincere fruitive workers, maybe you have one who's wise. Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakura states that the word karmanishta refers to one who aspires to enjoy the results of his good work and pious activity. Some followers of Vedic principles offer everything to the absolute truth and do not aspire to enjoy the results of their pious actions. These are also considered among the karma nishtas. Sometimes we see pious men earn money with great hardship and then spend the money for some pious cause by opening public charities, schools, and hospitals. Whether one earns money for himself or for the public benefit, he is called a karma nishta. That means he's fixed. And karma nishta means fixed, and karma means action. You know, he's fixed in his actions. Out of millions of karma nishtas, there may be one who is wise. Those who try to avoid fruitive activity and who become silent in order to merge into the spiritual existence of the Absolute Truth are generally known as gyanis, wise men. In other words, Krishna is actually giving Lord Chaitanya is giving a hierarchy here. He says you get these people who are, you know, really following Vedic principles for ulterior purposes, their personal purposes. And among some of them, you're going to find some intelligent people who know the material world or material acquirements are not the goal of life. And those people generally are basically interested in merging into the spiritual existence of the Absolute Truth because they see the material world is not where it's at. So let's just negate everything and merge. Merge means give up our identity, a spiritual suicide. They're not interested in fruitive activity, but merging with the Supreme. In either case, or either case, depending on how you pronounce that word, both the karma nishtas and the gyanis are interested in personal benefit. You know, let me get out of here, or let me acquire. The karmis are directly interested in personal benefit in the material world, and the gyanis are interested in merging into the existence of the Supreme because they just want to escape, escapism. The gyanis maintain the fruit of activity is imperfect. For them, perfection is the cessation of work and the merging into the Supreme existence. That is their goal in life. The gyani wants to extinguish the distinction between knowledge, the knower, and the aim of knowledge, make everything one. This philosophy is called monism or oneness and is characterized by spiritual silence. Ooh. Our process is not silence. Our process is chanting and spiritual sound vibration. No one is going to become God conscious or spiritually conscious by keeping silent. Of course, it's probably a good idea that these impersonalists, these monists, keep silent. That way they won't disturb us, so they should just shut their mouths. Koti jnani madjehaya eka jana mukta koti mukta madjedurlaba eka krishna bhakta. Out of many millions of such wise men, one may actually become liberated. In other words, all those people who are trying for that liberation, maybe one will be successful at it. Millions. One will get liberated, impersonal liberation. And out of many millions of such liberated persons, and so among many of them, they may get exposure to a devotee of Krishna. A pure devotee of Lord Krishna is very difficult to find. Wow. So the reason one of those liberated persons actually becomes a pure devotee is they have to come in contact with another pure devotee. Just like in the Jiva Dharma story, there was a sannyasi Thakur, who was a liberated soul, and he was chanting in Kashi, and either chanting or meditating on Brahman or whatever he was doing. But anyway, he was meditating, chanting, absorbed, or not absorbed, as the Maya bodies are. So, and then what happened is that a devotee came by chanting the holy names. And then he went, wow, what's happening here? And he became so attracted that he gave up his impersonal considerations. And what did he do? He went to Mayapur and became a devotee. In the Srimad Bhagavatam 10.2.32, it is said that due to their poor fund of knowledge, the jnanis are not actually liberated. That's Aruya Kachena Parampadam. Yenye Ravan Yaksha Vimuktimanina Tvayasta Bhavad Avashuddha Buddhya. They have Avashuddha Buddhya, the impure intelligence. They simply think that they are liberated. The perfection of knowledge culminates when one comes to the platform of knowing the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Brahmeti, Paramatmeti, Bhagavaneti, Shabdeti. That's another famous verse, 1.2.11. The absolute truth, such a vastu, is described as Brahman, Paramatma, and Bhagavan. Knowledge of the impersonal Brahman and the Supersoul is imperfect until one comes to the platform knowing the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Why is that? Knowledge of the impersonal Brahman just lets you understand Sat. Everything's internal. Everything is Brahman. All right, fine. But no happiness, no knowledge. And then knowledge of the Supersoul gives you Sat and Chit. Knowledge and that everything is there. And knowledge of the Supersoul. Okay. Chit. Chit means knowledge. But still you're not happy. You're miserable. It's imperfect until one comes to the platform knowing the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Therefore, it is clearly stated in this verse, Koti mukta bhajye durlabha eka krishna bhakta. Those who search after the knowledge of the impersonal Brahman or localized Paramatma are certainly accepted as liberated, but due to their imperfect knowledge, they are described in Srimad Bhagavatam as vimukta manina. That means they're just liberated in their minds. Since their knowledge is imperfect, their conception of liberation is imperfect, so they can't remain on that platform. That's the point. They come down again to the material world. Perfect knowledge is possible when one knows the Supreme Personality of Godhead. This is supported by Lord Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita, famous verse 529. And Prabhupada described this verse as the peace formula, which is Bhaktaram Jagatapasam Sarvalokamaheshwaram Suradam Sarvabhutanam Getvamam Shantim Richati 529. A person in full consciousness of me, knowing me to be the ultimate beneficiary of all sacrifice and austerities, Supreme Lord of all planets and demigods, and the benefactor and well-wisher of all living entities, attains peace from the pangs of material miseries. So also, if one knows that, then there's peace in society too. But right now, we are thinking that I'm the benefactor of whatever I do. I'm my well-wisher. I'm looking for other people to serve me, etc. and I'm the enjoyer. That's why we're here. That's called false ego. But there's a real ego. The real ego is what? Bhaktaram Jagatapa. So Krishna is the enjoyer, Krishna is the proprietor. I'm part and parcel of Krishna, and I love Krishna, I just want to serve him. That's real ego, real identification. It's not that we get rid of the ego, but we get rid of the illusory false ego. A person in full Krishna consciousness of me, I read that. Research is going on for the karmis, jnanis and yogis, but until the search is complete, no one can attain peace. Therefore, the Bhagavad Gita says, Gatwa mam shanti mrichati. One can actually attain peace when he knows Krishna. This is described in the next verse in Prabhupada. That's the peace formula. And this is another important verse here. Krishna bhakta nishkam ateva shanta bhukti mukti siddhi kami sakaleya shanta, which basically means only a devotee without material motivation or without material desire can be shanta or peaceful. And if one wants bhukti, sense gratification, mukti, liberation, or powers or position, then one will have a disturbed mind, like Aranyakashipu. So, because a devotee of Lord Krishna is desireless, he is peaceful. Of course, he's desiring Krishna's happiness. Fruit of work is desire material enjoyment, jnanis desire liberation, and yogis desire material opulence. Therefore, they're all lusty and cannot be peaceful. The devotee of Lord Krishna has no desire other than serving Krishna, pleasing Krishna, even though even so-called liberated people are full of desires. You know, even the desire to get out of this world is a self-centered desire. So you have to go. I mean, sometimes in Buddhism they talk about giving up all desires and giving up all thoughts, but you really can't. You have to have the right desires. Fruit of actors desire better living accommodations. Nice house. Jnanis want to be one with the Supreme. Yogis desire material opulence, yogic perfections, and magic. Because yogis, they can make themselves very small, very big. They can fly through the air. They can control people's minds. They can do all sorts of things like that. All of these non-devotees are lusty. That's an interesting word. Kami. Kami means, you know, lusty, basically. Because they desire something, they cannot have peace. When you're lusty, you'll never be satisfied. The peace formula is given by Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita 5.29, and we just read that in the previous purport. Bhaktaram Jagatapasam Sarvalokam Heshram Suradam Sarvabhutanam Getwa Mam Shanti Mrichati. One who simply understands that throughout the entire universe, Krishna is the supreme enjoyer and beneficiary of all kinds of sacrifices, penances, and austerities, which should be performed only to attain his devotional service, that Krishna is the supreme being and thus the proprietor of all material worlds, and that Krishna is the only friend who can actually do good to all living entities, Suradam Sarvabhutanam. One who understands these three principles about Krishna immediately becomes desireless, nishkama, and therefore peaceful. A Krishna bhakta knows that his friend and protector in all respects is Krishna, who is able to do anything for his devotee. Jai, my friend and my protector. Krishna says, Konteya pratijanihi name bhakta pranashini. Don't worry. 931. O son of Kunti, declare boldly that my devotee never perishes. Since Krishna gives this assurance, the devotee lives in Krishna and has no desire for personal benefit. The background for the devotee is the all-good himself. Why should the devotee aspire for something good for himself? His only business, because what makes us happy is to serve Krishna. That's our constitutional position. His only business is to please the Supreme by rendering as much service as possible. A Krishna bhakta has no desire for his own personal benefit. He is completely protected by the Supreme, Avasya Rakshibe Krishna, Vishwasa Palana. Bhaktivinoda Thakur says that he is desireless because Krishna will give him protection in all circumstances. It is not that he expects any assistance from Krishna, he simply depends on Krishna, just as a child depends on his parents. Wow. That doesn't mean you become functional, and you just say, you know, I'm not going to cook today. Krishna will cook for me. Krishna will do my laundry. No way. You got to study. You got to work. You do your service, and you do act responsibly in this world. You got to put petrol in your car. You know, it's not that Krishna's going to become the petrol. The child does not know how to expect service from his parents, but he is always protected nevertheless. This is called nishkama desirelessness. In other words, you work for Krishna very enthusiastically, then Krishna provides. Although karmis, gyanis, and yogis fulfill their desires by performing various activities, they are never satisfied. A karmi may work very hard to acquire $1 million, but as soon as he gets $1 million, he desires another million. Don't we see that? For the karmis, there is no end of desire. The more the karmi gets, the more he desires. The gyanis cannot be desireless because their intelligence is unsound. They want to merge into the Brahman effulgence, but even though they may be raised to that platform, they cannot be satisfied. They remember, the gyanis are those who actually want to merge into Brahman. Gyani means thoughtful people, wise men or thoughtful people. There are many gyanis or sannyasis who, after taking sannyas and giving up the world as false, return to the world to engage in politics or philanthropy or to open schools and hospitals. That doesn't describe me. I'm not doing that, even though I'm a sannyasi. This means they could not attain the real Brahman, Brahma Satyam, the truth of Brahman. They have to come down to the material platform to engage in philanthropic activity. Thus, they again cultivate desires, and when these desires are exhausted, they desire something different. You got to do that. In the material world, is this chapalasukha. You got one thing, they can change your desire. Therefore, the jnani cannot be nishkama desireless. Nor can the yogis be desireless, for they desire yogic perfections in order to exhibit some magical feats and gain popularity. That might be interesting. You walk on water. People gather around these yogis, and the yogis desire more and more adulation. Imagine if I could walk on water or fly through the air. Wow. Everybody would want to be my disciple then. Because they misuse their mystic power, they fall down again in the material platform. It's not possible for them to become nishkama or desireless. Whew. So forget about that yoga process. The conclusion is that only the devotees who are simply satisfied in serving the Lord can actually become desireless. Therefore, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says here, Krishna Bhakta Nishkama. Since the Krishna Bhakta, the devotee of Krishna, is satisfied with Krishna, there's no possibility of fall down. Nice verse. Another important verse, Muktanama Abhisidanam Narayana Parayana Sudurlabha Prashantatma Kotishvapi Mahamune. What does that mean? O great sage, out of many millions of materially liberated persons who are free from ignorance, and out of millions of siddhas who have nearly attained perfection, there's only one pure devotee of Narayana. Only such a devotee is actually completely satisfied and peaceful. So you want to be satisfied, tushanti cha, ramanti cha, happy, peaceful. It's the only way. There's no other way. Otherwise, you will be in anxiety and depressed and problematic. This verse is quoted from Srimad Bhagavatam 6.14.5. The Narayana Parayana, the devotee of Lord Narayana, is the only blissful person. One who becomes a Narayana Parayana is already liberated from material bondage. He already possesses all the perfections of yoga. Unless one comes to the platform of Narayana Parayana and passes over the platform of Bhukti Mukti City. Bhukti Mukti City means gross sense gratification, liberation, and powers like yogis have. You have to give that up. He cannot be fully satisfied. That is pure devotional. That is the pure devotional stage. That's the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu 1.1.11. That's the nutshell verse from the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, which basically says that if one wants to be Krishna conscious, you have to be devoid of desire for subtle or gross sense gratification as jnana and karma. And then you have to be ready to serve Krishna according to the way Krishna wants to do, be active at it, and like to do it. In other words, it has to be done out of love, not out of simple duty. I mean, duty is okay. Why are you serving Krishna? It's my duty. It's okay, better than nothing. Better than nothing. But bhakti yoga means I'm serving Krishna because I want to please Krishna. And if you actually want to please Krishna, or if you're not really at that platform right now, then you think, I want to please my spiritual master. Because the spiritual master is actually collecting the taxes on behalf of Krishna. One who desires nothing but Krishna and who is not influenced by the process of Gyanamarga, that means the path of the cultivation of knowledge, actually becomes free from ignorance. A first-class person is one who is not influenced by karma. Karma means activity or fruit of activity, things you get in this world. In other words, they're not important to you, or yoga, mystic power. He simply depends on Krishna to satisfy it in his devotional service. According to Srimad Bhagavatam 6.17.28, Narayana Paraksarve Nakutashna Vibhiti, such a person is never afraid of anything. For him, heaven and hell are the same. Not knowing the situation of a Narayana Parayana, rascals become envious. So that's interesting. Why is heaven and hell the same? Now, many times I'm talking to Christians and they tell me, you are going to hell, buddy. And what I say to them, I said, cool. Well, hot. But cool, cool means good. Because then we can actually serve Krishna there by preaching. Just like sometimes devotees may go to a prison to preach. But they don't become prisoners, because they're going to preach Krishna consciousness to the prisoners. I mean, it's obvious. So wherever we go, we do the same thing. Prabhupada mentioned that in this particular, in his commentary to this verse, that wherever you go, devotee does the same thing. He's serving Krishna, whether it's heaven or hell or in between or the spiritual world. And that's a famous verse, 6.17.28. By the grace of Narayan, a devotee is situated in the most opulent position in the material world. Rascals are envious of Narayan and his devotee, but the devotee endeavors to please another devotee of Narayan because he knows that by pleasing Narayan's representative, one directly pleases Lord Narayan. Therefore, a devotee offers the best comforts and facilities to his spiritual master. However, the spiritual master is not asking for comforts and facilities. The spiritual master just wants to please Krishna. He's not thinking, I'm a spiritual master, let me have a soft bed, Hiranyakashipu, and gold. Outsiders, he's thinking, I just want, like Prabhupada. Outsiders who have no, because Prabhupada never wanted any of these things, but the devotees endeavor their best to provide him with the best facility. Outsiders who have no knowledge of Narayan are envious of both Narayan and his devotee. Consequently, when they see that Narayan's devotee is opulently situated, they become even more envious. And, you know, there's that example that when Prabhupada was picked up at the airport, he was picked up one time in a Rolls Royce. Rolls Royce is one of the most opulent cars you can imagine. Actually, my father had a Rolls Royce. And I went in, one time I went for a ride with him in the Rolls Royce, and I said, you know, what sort of mileage? I mean, how many miles do you get per gallon? And he said to me, if you have to ask that question, you don't belong in this car. Because, you know, car's so expensive. Anyway, so Prabhupada was picked up in a Rolls Royce. And people were complaining in Rolls Royce. And Prabhupada said, he turned the whole thing on its head when they were complaining. He says, a gold car is not good enough for the spiritual master. But the spiritual master doesn't desire these things, but it's the disciple's business. But when the devotee of Narayana asks such foolish people to come live with him and in the same comfortable situation, they do not agree because they cannot give up illicit sex, mating, intoxication, gambling, which is quite interesting. So we're right here around this university. We want to set up like a Krishna house where people can come live. And obviously, if they're going to come live and go to school, they'll have to give up intoxication, illicit sex, gambling, meeting, intoxication, whatever. Did I leave one out? Yeah, no, I mentioned them all. And it's very hard to find people. In the university, it's just like that's their life. you know, they're at the university, basically for partying. You know, it's just like, wow, all hell breaks loose. Just like sometimes I get up in the morning, I always get up in the morning, if I'm here, I get up in the morning, chant, and the people are still partying till the sunrise, and they're intoxicated, they're lying in the street drunk. Therefore, the materialist refuses the company of a Narayana Parayana, although he is envious of the devotee's material situation. In other words, people would come to Prabhupada and said, you're all living so nicely. Prabhupada said, come live with us. You won't have to work so hard. Oh, you work for Krishna. You won't have to work so hard and worry about so many things. And Prabhupada said, you just have to follow four rules and regulations. No intoxication, no meeting, no sex, no gambling. And they said, ooh, no way, I'd rather work like a jackass and keep doing those things. In Western countries, when ordinary men, storekeepers, and workers see our devotees living and eating sumptuously, and yet not working, they become very eager to know where they get the money. Of course, we're working for Krishna, now that we're sitting around eating sumptuously and just getting fat. Such people become envious and ask, how is it possible to live so comfortably without working? How is it that you have so many cars, bright faces, and nice clothes? Not knowing that Krishna looks after his devotees, such people become surprised, and some become envioso. That's envious in Spanish. So, another good verse. Wow. Hopefully it's probably a long purport. Brahmanda brahmate kona bhagyavan. I am not in Baton Rouge. I am in Raleigh, North Carolina. Brahmanda brahmate kona bhagyavan jeev guru krishna prasade bhai paya bhakti lata bhish. Very important verse. According to their karma, the living entities are wandering throughout the entire universe. Some of them are being elevated to the upper planetary system. Some are going down to lower planetary systems. Out of many millions of wandering living entities, one who is very fortunate gets an opportunity to associate with a bona fide spiritual master by the grace of Krishna. By the mercy of both Krishna and the spiritual master, such a person receives the seed of the creeper of devotional service. Very important. When we speak of Brahmananda, we refer to the whole universe or to the cluster of many millions of universes. In all the universes, there are innumerable planets, and there are innumerable living entities upon those planets in the air, on land, and in the water. There are millions and trillions, even more than that, of living entities everywhere, and they are engaged by Maya in suffering and enjoying the results of their fruit of activity life after life. This is the position of the materially conditioned living entities. Out of many of these living entities, one who is actually fortunate, Bhagyavan, comes in contact with a bona fide spiritual master by Krishna's mercy. Krishna is situated in everyone's heart, and if one desires something, Krishna fulfills one's desire. If the living entity, by chance or fortune, comes in contact with a Krishna conscious movement and wishes to associate with that movement, Krishna, who is situated in everyone's heart, gives them the chance to meet a bona fide spiritual master. This is called Guru Krishna Prasada. Krishna is prepared to bestow his mercy upon all living entities, and as soon as a living entity desires the Lord's mercy, the Lord immediately gives him an opportunity to meet a bona fide spiritual master. Such a fortunate person is fortified by both Krishna and the spiritual master. He is helped from within by Krishna and from without by the spiritual master. Both are prepared to help the sincere living being become free from material bondage. How one can become fortunate can be seen in the life of Srila Narada Muni. In his previous life, he was born of a maidservant. Although he was not born into a prestigious position, his mother was fortunately engaged in rendering service to some Vaishnavas. When these Vaishnavas were resting during the Chaturmasya period, the boy Narada took the opportunity to engage in their service. Taking compassion upon the boy, the Vaishnavas offered him the remnants of their food. By serving these Vaishnavas and obeying their orders, the boy became the object of their sympathy, and by the Vaishnavas' unknown mercy, he gradually became a pure devotee. In the next life, he was Narada Muni, the most exalted of Vaishnavas and the most important guru and acharya of the Vaishnavas. Following in the footsteps of Narada Muni, this Krishna conscious movement is rendering service to humanity by giving everyone a chance to come in contact with Krishna. If one is fortunate, he becomes intimately related with this movement. Then, by the grace of Krishna, one's life becomes successful. Everyone has dormant Krishna bhakti, very important. Everyone has Krishna bhakti dormant, love of Krishna. And in the association of good devotees, that love is revealed. As stated in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, Majjha Lila 22.107, Nitya Siddha Krishna Prem, Saja Kabunai, Shravanadi Shuddha Chitte Kari Udoy. Dormant devotional service to Krishna is within everyone. Simply by one's associating with devotees, hearing their good instructions, and chanting the Hare Krishna mantra, dormant love for Krishna is awakened. In this way, one acquires the seed of devotional service, Guru Krishna Prasade Pai Bhakti Lata Bhis. So in other words, the living entity is wandering all over the place, and when he is ready, because nothing happens by accident, when he is ready to come in contact with a pure devotee who can implant within his heart the seed of devotion, then Krishna sends the pure devotee, or he comes in contact with the pure devotee, just like when I was ready, I was listening on the radio and there was Prabhupada chanting. And someone gave me a Krishna book. It's not by accident that these things happen. It's by Krishna's arrangement. I was ready. So nothing happens by accident. So be ready and take advantage of the opportunity when Krishna sends pure devotee. Okay. So on that happy note, we'll end here at text 151, and we will stop sharing and allow you all to unmute yourselves. Okay, who has a question? So you can unmute yourself. You're allowed to unmute yourself, or you can type in the text window, or you can raise your hand. Okay, Ananta. You have a question. Oh, you unmuted yourself and then you muted yourself again. So who has a question? Either unmute yourself, raise your hand, or type in the text window.
I'll ask if no one else is.
Okay, Ms. Craddock.
Please set my obeisances. Okay, so yesterday you were talking about getting the potency from the spiritual master for preaching and becoming empowered and everything. And, I kind of forget exactly what I was going to ask. You made me forget. So even when the guru and Krishna really want to get through to someone, though, they'll still work through us, even though we're like dull as a goal and not yes. good. Because even like
yeah, the but still we have to accept. We have to accept. I mean, the guru facilitates one's Krishna consciousness. I like that word. He doesn't make someone Krishna conscious. He facilitates through instructions. Yeah. You connect with the guru, and by following the instructions, and ultimately by hearing nicely, then one makes spiritual advancement. But it's not just like an automatic thing. It's not just automatic that one becomes Krishna conscious. You know, just like, oh, Gurudev, give me your magic foot dust. Ooh, thank you. You know, it's like, was there some fairy tale where some fairy sprinkled
it. Twinkle toes or something with the wand or something?
No, that was Tinkerbell.
Twinkle toes.
Tinkerbell.
Yeah.
She sprinkled her dust, her fairy dust, on someone's head and then something happened anyway. So it's not that the guru takes the foot dust and goes, shh, shh.
Yeah.
You know, it's interesting, like, you know, when you have a Vyas Puja, everybody rushes up to touch your feet and help bathe your feet. And then when you open your mouth and want to talk, they don't listen. So it's like it's like the people want one part of the body but not the other part. They would like to amputate the feet and have the feet but not the mouth. It's like the chicken who laid the golden egg. You know, once upon a time, this chicken laid the golden egg, and people thought, you know, the chicken's eating, too, so it has a mouth, so let's take away the mouth, and then they won't have to feed the chicken, and then we'll just get golden eggs. Okay, so here's some questions in the chat window. Hare Krishna, Maharaj. We understand dormant Krishna consciousness in everyone's heart, yes. We are advised to exercise discretion when dealing with different types of people. Could you elaborate on this? Well, there's different types of people. There's different ways to awaken it. You know, you can't awaken it by saying, wake up, buddy. You're not necessarily, you know, that you're in Maya and gotta follow four regulated principles, you know, smash people in the beginning. But you give them the holy name. In the holy name, you can awaken it with through prashanam. So there's a discrimination according to time, place, and circumstance. And if someone is really averse to Krishna consciousness, just give them prashanam. You know, sneak a little prashanam in. Just like my grandmother wasn't averse, but my grandmother was getting ready to die and she was drinking tea or something like that. And I put a little radhakun water in the tea. And then she became a devotee. Now she's born in the Krishna consciousness movement. So anyway, so I hope so. So yes, there has to be some discrimination. Discrimination means, actually Prabhupada said discrimination is the better part of valor. So that's required, time, place, and circumstance, how to present Krishna consciousness. And it's a whole science. Because you're approaching different types of people, whether their cultural background is different, whether their religious background is different, whether their racial background is different. Even though we say, you know, this is transcendental, everybody is spirit soul, but people are coming with different baggage, you know, cultural baggage, racial baggage, gender baggage. I mean, people have all this baggage, so you have to really understand how to give them Krishna consciousness. So the baggage doesn't get in the way. And that takes a lot of discrimination. Yeah, okay. Gopal, actually, that's from Peter Pan, Tinkerbell, you know, whatever. And I don't want to know the story. Tinkerbell. Anyway, so who else has a question? Someone else has a question or a comment? We have another
question. I have a question, Gurudev.
Yeah. Champaka.
So our motivation is supposed to be to try to serve Guru. And so if we've somehow made a mistake or failed in our service and we feel shame and regret and even maybe some sadness and depression, how do we know that those are, whether those are selfish feelings or spiritual feelings?
We got to ask the Guru. Or advanced devotees, you know, advanced devotees, and not necessarily one's mother. So, it's an inside joke, if I ever made one. So, one has to ask advanced devotees or guru, people who are no conflicts of interest. Like if I ask my mother, of course, right? I couldn't. My mother's not really that much capable of answering. So there's some sort of conflict of interest that people want to make us in a certain image. So one has to ask someone and to say, you know, because sometimes we really like get into enjoy the emotions of a guilt trip or feeling guilty, you know, just it stimulates people or the people are addicted to it or it's their conditioned nature. So we have to be very careful. You know, we make a mistake, sure, we make mistakes. Then we just go on. I mean, there's no prayaschitta for a devotee. The devotee's only prayaschitta is chanting Hare Krishna. You make a mistake, you stand up again, and you keep on going. Yeah, so. Anyway, the main thing is to consult with advanced devotees. To figure out what's the right thing. Because if we are conditioned, then we have a tendency to make mistakes. We have a tendency to be illusioned. We have a tendency to cheat others. And of course, be cheated too. And we also have imperfect senses. So we can perceive something, or we think we perceive something that's not there, or we cannot perceive something that is there. So we have to really keep in mind that all the time, as long as we're conditioned, we're subject to the four defects of the conditioned soul. And oftentimes we think we're so advanced we don't have these four defects. We know what's best. So it requires a lot of intelligence and introspection to understand, and humility to understand, that we are subject to these four defects. The four defects again: imperfect senses. Another defect is tendency to make mistakes. Tendency to cheat ourselves too. And the final one is a tendency to be illusioned. So the tendency to cheat doesn't necessarily refer only to other people, but it refers to ourselves. You know, we cheat ourselves in many ways. And we trust our feelings and emotions, I think, too much. We really get into it. You know, it's really enjoyable to get into our emotions sometimes. Why do people get on a roller coaster? Because it's fun. You get emotional, you get scared, you get angry. I mean, not angry. Hopefully you don't get angry. You start screaming. Because it's like, sometimes to get feelings, people even poke themselves. You know, just to have some feelings. Okay. On that happy note, I think, unless someone has some pressing questions or comments, then we can end. No one has pressing questions or comments. Okay, so we'll see everybody tomorrow, same time, same station. Thank you all very much for coming and participating in this ecstatic. I'm having a good time, really, reading Lord Chaitanya's teachings to Rupa Goswami. I mean, I learn so much each and every time I read. It's all like a new experience. It's not like something old. Okay. All glorious to His divine grace, Śrīla Prabhupāda, Śrīla Prabhupāda ki.